Hey everyone, welcome to a modern nonprofit podcast. We're back again with another episode, this time specifically geared towards nonprofits and tax issues. A lot of times nonprofits think taxes are not relevant to them. They don't have to worry about taxes, but I have bad news for you all. Taxes are very relevant to the nonprofit space, especially when you get into trouble. So today we have Ben Golden, a good friend of mine. He does all things tax resolution, means he helps people fix their tax problems. He has tons and tons of experience working with nonprofits. But you know, I thought what better person to get on and talk to us about one, how do we keep ourselves out of trouble? And then two, how do we get ourselves out of trouble if we mistakenly find ourselves in that spot? So Ben, if you don't mind, let's just go ahead and get started. Got a couple questions for you today that I get all the time. So let's just start with the first one. What taxes should a nonprofit expect to pay?
As you already know, nonprofits really don't have that many taxes. So you've got payroll taxes, you've got unrelated business income taxes, things of that nature. So compliance is the key when you're looking at nonprofits, and that's what I would really encourage. A lot of people miss it when they don't file their 1099s, they don't file their 990s timely, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. For a nonprofit setting, not only the payroll side, but compliance is the most important that they need to deal with.
Gotcha. So I get questions all the time about compensation, you know, as it relates to employee versus independent contractor, especially for these small organizations that have their executive directors set up or looking to pay their executive directors. And so I get questions all the time around their compensation as a whole. You know, can I pay them independent contractors? Can I pay them as employees? What about fringe benefits? What about reimbursement? So can you give us a little bit of guidance on, for one, can an executive director be an independent contractor in your experience? And two, like, what are some of those fringe benefits that really should be taxable, but people kind of miss that and they just write a check out thinking it's an expense reimbursement when in reality it's some sort of taxable allowance or something?
So let's jump into compensation first. Normally, if you have an executive director or someone that works for the nonprofit, then normally they are going to be compensated with the W-2 wage as opposed to an independent contractor. If they are an independent contractor, there are certain things that they need to have, like a contract. They have to have their own hours, so the nonprofit cannot tell them when to work. The biggest thing on an independent contractor is if you want to be able to replace yourself with another person, an independent contractor should be able to do so. So a lot of times you have to be paid as a W-2 wage because you can't let someone else replace what you do for that nonprofit because they don't have the ability or the expertise, things of that nature. So more times than not, you're going to want to pay compensation to your executive director and not necessarily your board. Your board is usually voluntary. A lot of people miss the fact that they actually have to have the plans in place. And that means that you have to have an accountable reimbursement plan in order to reimburse the expenses that someone may have. And if you don't have that, then it should be added to their compensation. And that also means that the accountable reimbursement plan has to be followed properly. Mm-hmm. So you have to be careful. You have to be careful when you look at those reimbursements. If it's not done properly, then it should be added to that W-2 wage.
So let's talk a little bit more about expenses. So when you're talking about a car allowance or cell phone allowance, those are the most, you know, common things. How would you advise us to handle that? Some people default to, I'm just going to add $50 a month to my paycheck, right? As you know, a non-taxable fringe benefit, if you will. How would you, for someone that has to represent many people, businesses, and organizations in front of an IRS, what would you say is the most conservative approach to handling kind of flat rate reimbursement, more like an allowance, really, right? $150 car allowance or $50 cell phone allowance.
So you can't really have a stipend, and that's what we're talking about. can I have a stipend for a car allowance of, let's call it $500 a month, in order to reimburse someone? The answer is no. If it's a stipend, then there's no true reimbursement there. Same way with a cell phone. You should have an accountable reimbursement plan in place. And let me tell you what that means. That means that if I drove 3,000 miles in 1 month, I should get reimbursed for those 3,000 miles, as opposed to month two, where it could be 500 miles. And if you give me a stipend, one of the things inside of a counter reimbursement plan that it says is that it cannot be more than what the reimbursement is. If it is more than the reimbursement, then it should be added to your W-2 wage. Gotcha. Same way with a cell phone. The thing about an accountable reimbursement plan is you have to actually give a receipt. Now, the company, the nonprofit organization, can limit how much they give on the lower side. But if it's more than what the request is, it should be added to a W-2 wage.
Gotcha. So if what I'm hearing, it kind of comes down to, if you don't want to be taxed on it as an employee, you have to do a little bit more of the administrative work and keep track of it, submit your receipts. If you are fine with being taxed, essentially, then you could do some sort of allowance, but you're going to likely put yourself potentially at a disadvantage financially as an individual, because the actual reimbursement might be much more, or you're going to be taxed on it. Right? Is that fair summary?
Exactly. Gotcha. And I tell people, anytime you want to save money with taxes, there's always going to be red tape involved. So you have to either be willing to jump over the hurdle or through the hoop in order to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Good point. So, you know, we talk a lot about the prevention of getting in trouble. I think a lot of times with the IRS, there's things that you don't know what you don't know, right? And sometimes I've worked with organizations, and I know you have, Ben, we worked on a couple projects together, you know, with respect to consequences of not staying in compliance. So can you give us kind of your top three? These are the most common consequences, and what triggered those consequences with respect to non-compliance with taxes in general.
So let's talk specifically about nonprofits first. If someone doesn't file their 990 3 years in a row, then their nonprofit status will get taken away. So that's number one. They need to make sure that they file their 990 timely every single year. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that people, they don't pay their payroll taxes sometimes because they take the money and they allocate it to other places. Let's say that they're trying to do fundraisers. Yeah, once I do this fundraiser, I'm going to be able to pay the taxes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just a very, very slippery slope. So the secondary place where people miss is non-payment of payroll taxes. And we can get into that in a second. And I would say the third place where people miss is non-filing of their 1099s. Mm-hmm. And that will get them in trouble as well, because remember, they have to stay in compliance in order to make sure that they protect their nonprofit status.
Gotcha.
So let's talk a little bit about payroll taxes. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's say that for some reason you're not able to pay your payroll taxes for one quarter. A lot of people don't understand that payroll taxes are built into four different items. Those items are employer taxes, penalties, interest, and employee side of taxes. Now, the employee side of taxes, let's say that you pay somebody $100 gross. They take out $20 out of their check for their taxes, for their Social Security and withholding, and they get a net check of $80. That $20 is called the trust fund portion. And that trust fund portion is always going to be taxed or put towards a responsible party if for some reason they're not paid. Mm-hmm. Now, a responsible party is somebody that has the right to make decisions on who is paid. So if you don't pay your taxes for that quarter, then that trust fund portion can be pushed to the responsible party. And it's one of the only times that the IRS can break through the corporate veil and say, okay, the EIN number, the company is not responsible. Now, Tasha, your social security number, you're personally going to be responsible for that tax portion, okay, for that trust fund portion. So if you don't pay your taxes, just understand that you could have additional responsibilities to pay those.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to add too, you mentioned earlier about filing a tax return every year. I think that what people fail to understand, especially startup or small nonprofits, you have to file a tax return every year, regardless if you have activity or not. That tells the IRS what activities, including zero activities, have taken place in the organization. So I get that all the time. Well, we were dormant, we didn't do anything. The IRS does not care. You have to file something every year. So let's talk a little bit more about kind of like piercing that corporate veil. I think a lot of times a nonprofit organization assumes nobody owns it. Yes, we should be good stewards, but ultimately there's no personal responsibility. And I know you and I have worked on cases before where that's simply not true. Let's talk about the different people that the IRS could hold responsible for tax issues with respect to a nonprofit and what those parties are and why the IRS deems them responsible.
So I have literally seen the IRS hold executive directors responsible. I've seen them hold accountants responsible. So let's say that the accountant was, normally it has to be a paid position. If it's a voluntary position, normally the IRS does not come after those individuals like a board of directors. However, if the accountant has the ability to make the decision on who gets paid and they say, okay, IRS, we're not paying you right now, then they are going to be a responsible party. At the end of the day, the responsible party is going to be the person who has the ability to make the decision and the ability, authority, and power to make the decision on who gets paid. And it doesn't matter the position that they hold inside the company.
Right, right. Could be a bookkeeper, right?
Yep, an accountant, a bookkeeper, executive director. It could be an assistant, anybody that has the ability to make that decision. The first thing that the IRS always looks at is who is the signatory on the checking account, on the accounts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Because a lot of times it's multiple board members that really have no idea really what's going on within an organization. You know, and I think one thing that I found interesting, you know, in my experience working with the IRS, limited, thank God, experience working with the IRS is, you know, the fact that people think that they're not necessarily making an intentional choice to not pay the IRS, but the IRS looks at it, well, you have all of these bills and you've cut all of these checks. One of them wasn't to the IRS. So intentionally or unintentionally, consciously or subconsciously, by not paying the IRS, you've chosen to not pay them, right? Because you've paid some people. It's not like you failed to pay anybody. You've paid everyone but the IRS, including yourself, right? As the executive director or the assistant executive director or the bookkeeper, you've chosen to draw your salary, but you've chosen to not pay the IRS. So that's a really interesting thought that I realized, well, we didn't opt to not pay them. Like, we didn't make the conscious choice to not pay them necessarily. We didn't have that conversation. It just didn't happen. And the IRS looks at that as, in fact, a choice. So let's say, go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say, if you choose to pay the power bill and keep the power on and not pay the IRS, that's still a choice.
Right.
And the IRS looks at it, well, you should have done a better job at making sure that we were paid. And because you didn't, now we're going to come after you and pierce through the corporate veil and come after you personally. And when they do it, they come full force. Now, there's a lot of steps that they have to take, and there's a lot of paperwork that they have to do, but it's still something that they do every single day.
Right, right. So I'm sure there are many, many people out there that work for a nonprofit, that are on the board of a nonprofit, or are founders of a nonprofit that have found themselves in trouble with the IRS. What should these nonprofits do once they start getting the tax notices and realize that there's a problem?
First thing is, do not stick your head in the sand or throw the notices away and think that it's just going to go away. You know, a lot of people think, oh, if I just ignore it, it'll be okay. No, not with the IRS. That's not really the way they work.
No.
So you need to get a plan on how to, resolve the issue. And that's really what you need to do. And if you can't afford to, I would really encourage you to seek someone's help to figure out what the next step is. You know, go to a professional, seek the advice of a professional to see what you should do, or should you talk to the IRS or should you not? Or should you get a professional to do so?
And I think in your advice as a professional that represents many people in businesses, you as an individual should probably not talk to the IRS, correct? That would be your professional opinion if you can afford to hire some sort of representation.
Well, I mean, just understand that the IRS, they're always fishing. They're always looking for something else. They're always trying to, find out, more information than what is on the surface. So, I mean, it's just like if you got in trouble and you had to go to, answer some questions at, the jail, wouldn't you want to have your attorney present? Regardless if you're innocent or guilty or what, you never know what they're going to try to say or do. I know that I would. And that's really the way that I look at it, is you don't want to talk to somebody where you don't know what their true intentions are.
Absolutely. So, Ben, I invited you on this episode because I think you're probably the person that knows the IRS code more by heart than anyone else I've ever met. Tell us how you got to understand something that so many people dread or avoid, the IRS code.
So, as a young professional, I was bullied by the IRS, and they told me, Ben, you have to pay one of your clients' debts. And they tried to force me to pay $171,000 in my client's tax debt. And they said that I was a responsible party, and the revenue officer, it's amazing because she called me and she said, Mr. Golden, these are the places where you have a signature on account. This is where you have your money. This is how much money you have in your 401k. This is where you own property. These are the vehicles that you own. You need to liquidate everything and pay the IRS off. Mm-hmm. And I flipped out. I mean, to have the IRS tell you how much you had in your 401k, I mean, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So I told the revenue officer, I was like, listen, I'll give you what I want to do in 24 hours. Let me talk to my wife and see what the next step is for us. And literally I called my wife and said, babe, I got to do some research tonight. Love you. Not cutting home. So, I went down and ate supper and kissed my, 1 and 3 year old and then went back up and did research. And about 3 a.m. the next morning, I figured out where the revenue officer had abused her authority, power, and discretion in my case, and had, pretty much, I think it was identity theft, but they didn't have the authority to look into me in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's why I'm so passionate, because if I'm a practitioner and I know what I'm doing, and the IRS treats me that way, how are they going to treat the layperson that doesn't know the IRS?
Right.
So it's been my lifelong passion to learn as much as I can about how the IRS operates, the codes, the case law, the regulations, everything. I'm trying to learn as much as I can so I can protect my clients as much as I possibly can.
Sure. And I think you do that quite a bit. So if people want to talk with you more and get in touch with you about fixing their, whether somebody's listening, they happen to have their own personal tax problems, or if they are in fact working with a nonprofit as a board member or a founder, how could they best get in touch with you if they wanted to pick your brain a little bit more about how you might be able to help represent them?
Yeah, the easiest way is to give us a call at 844-229-8936. Or you can check us out on our website, www.goldentaxrelief.com.
Sounds great, Ben. And we'll go ahead and put that website in the show notes as well. Well, Ben, it's been so great, as always, to see you and to have you on to talk to us a little bit more about tax compliance. I know when I have any issues for our clients, you're usually a phone call away to help me understand what's going on. So I know this is going to be really valuable for those listeners out there. So, Ben, thank you so much. And until next time, see you all, everybody.